Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Reasons behind Wall Street's recent rally. Yesterday, we talked to a crypto exchange that incentivizes yield farming of crypto assets, and they raised the issue of automated market makers. What exactly are they, and why do they matter to retail investors? What do we need to understand? Also, you've heard China now taking aim at business drinking. We'll find out more about whether funds are trimming China's stock weightage at all. With Arun Pai, Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. Good morning, Arun.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good to have you with us. So how do investors like you read inflation numbers from Wednesday? We know U.S. consumer prices jumped 5.4% on an annual basis, still way above the Fed's 2% long-term target. Treasury yields and oil prices dropped at least temporarily. So big picture, prices for U.S. consumers rose last month, but at the slowest pace since February. So as an investor, were you cheering overnight on the news that the rate of inflation may be easing off?
I mean, they were perfect numbers, right? It seems like the Fed so far has got it absolutely spot on. Where, sure, like July numbers, the CPI numbers excluding energy and food increased 0.3%, which was lower than expectations of 0.4%. Used car prices, which is another big metric, increased by 0.2% only, and that was from a massive rise of over 10% the month before. So overall, markets reacted accordingly. It's the Goldilocks period. Interest rates are basically at 0%. Tapering does not seem to be too likely. The Fed is very happy with these numbers, so presumably they're going to not be, you know, tapering anytime soon. And the market reacted accordingly. Dow Jones hit, you know, yet another all-time high. All the numbers were in the right direction for investors to come back into the market with a lot more confidence.
All right. So we've had a lot of discussion. Is it not transitory? So it looks like Jerome Powell was right.
So far, the thing that I would look at also, though, is, you know, there was another headline, I think, yesterday or day before, where there are over 10 million job openings now in the country. And when companies have, you know, such a large number of job openings, they have to start coming up with either innovative ways of trying to get people to come back into the job force, or obviously dangle higher salaries. And that seems to be especially the case when it comes to the hourly wage worker. So I think the big question mark is, as and when companies that are forced to be hiring more people at a higher base salary, how that works its way through the market. And I think that's a big question mark, which we will need to see how it evolves over the next couple of months. In terms of just some other price points, let's talk about hotel and air ticket travel, right? Like based on the price increases over the past couple of months, it's roughly come back to pre-pandemic levels. So from that aspect, you know, we would assume that future inflation from that segment might not be picking up as much, and hence, you know, the whole transitory nature of inflation is possible. But when it comes to rent, I think that's an interesting sector which we'll start seeing the effects of over the next couple of months. Industrial rent properties in the U.S. Have been increasing month on month at quite an alarming rate. Housing, though, has not caught up just yet. And that's a bit surprising given the shortage of the amount of houses in the market, coupled with the wage inflation that I was just highlighting a little bit earlier. That can be a big question mark. And because rent price increases are a lot more sticky in nature, because, you know, once you get into a contract, it's typically a one-year or two-year contract, the inflation aspect from that can be picking up quite a bit over the next, you know, quarter to two quarters. And then it'll be interesting to see what the Fed has to do on the back of that.
Because
out of the woods just yet.
Rents are already rising, right, in the U.S.?
They are, but I believe, at least on the housing side, a lot more is going to be coming soon on the back of the shortage of current housing plus wage inflation increasing.
Yeah. Okay. Very important points there. Okay. So do you expect companies to very quickly raise prices to offset possibly higher costs for labor, as you mentioned?
Absolutely. And it's all like it's a cycle, right? It's that flywheel that starts moving where companies need to hire more people. They have to pay them more salaries. How do they make up for it? They've got to start increasing their cost. They have to start increasing their selling prices of their goods. And we have already started to see that by a number of FMCG, you know, other also just consumer good companies that are out there, where like from the likes of Nestle, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, they've all been steadily increasing their prices to make up for that increase in base cost. The question mark, obviously, though, is that going to be a longer-term trend? Or do companies see that only, you know, for the next quarter, potentially, and then it'll stabilize a little bit more? And my personal take is that inflation is going to rear its ugly head to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It will probably go above that 2% threshold, which the Fed wants, and I still don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, like let it go slightly over 2%. The Fed will be happy. The question is to what extent over that 2% mark will it go and for how long a period? And so far the Fed is right, but I think that's something that investors should really be concerned about.
All right. We saw share prices heading higher overnight. Most investors seem to cheer the news. Not across the board, though. Dow and S&P 500 finished at record highs. NASDAQ gave up ground. So in your opinion, which sectors appear to be most in favor?
To be honest, I missed out on the tech rally quite a bit, right? Because valuations were quite high and I still believe they're extremely high. I'm hoping, though, that the more traditional businesses, FMCG, oil, transportation, given the backdrop of an extremely strong economy that's there in the U.S. right now, I believe that valuations in those less looked upon sectors are going to start catching up a little bit more. And hopefully that will provide some nice tailwinds to the underlying stock price of those companies.
Okay. Now help us out. This is a question that is going to come up at gatherings that people are now heading to, dinner parties out there. Every time stocks go up, you get a legion of commentators who eagerly explain that the entire move is just an asset bubble engineered by the Federal Reserve's easy money policies, and it will be rolled back the moment the Fed decides to tighten. Not my words, the words of Jim Cramer from Mad Money. And he says that's pure idiocy. Now, this is an argument you hear a lot, you know, at happy hour and over drinks and dinner parties as well. So let's get your view. Is it too easy to explain the Wall Street rally by pointing to the Fed's easy money policies?
I kind of actually agree with Jim Cramer on this. But before that, you know, like I think Warren Buffett puts it the best. He calls interest rates like gravity to asset prices, right? So you reduce the amount of interest rate, i.e. gravity coming down, asset prices inflate. Mm-hmm. And obviously the other way around. And we've seen that over the past 8 or 10 years, you know, with interest rates basically close to 0%, especially in the last 3+ years, we've seen that lead to certain asset price inflations. That being said, though, let's not absolve the fact that the two world's largest economies, the U.S. and China, are in an extremely strong situation, right? You have the financial sector, especially in the U.S., extremely solid. Balance sheets, you know, like Fort Knox, extremely strong. You have the underlying pent-up consumer demand post the COVID pandemic, not being able to travel, not being able to spend. We're seeing a lot more of that coming out now that vaccination rates have shot up. So attributing everything just to the Fed is definitely erroneous, right? Because you have all sorts of initiatives that have been undertaken by governments across the world to ensure that the public, the voter base, is not as badly affected by the pandemic as it potentially could have been. All those stimulus paychecks, the rate of vaccinations that are being rolled out right now, we can just see the numbers already, like in terms of travel, in terms of consumer spending. We've seen a lot more real economy numbers picking up. Talking about tech, though, slightly, you know, it's like mixed views on that. Are the valuations sky high? Absolutely. But in all fairness to the entire tech industry, has it actually shown exemplary growth numbers? I would have to say that's a yes, too. And by growth numbers, I don't mean like fuzzy things like back in the dot-com era of eyeballs on websites and stuff. Mm-hmm. We're talking about real top-line revenue that has shot through the ranks like, you know, Zoom, Peloton, all these companies, which I personally thought were extremely overvalued, and I still do believe that, but they've really showcased tremendous growth. Whether that materializes into the bottom line so that, you know, eventually this can become more of a multiple of price to earnings or like discounted cash flow analysis, that's still a bit of a question mark. But, you know, with all respect, it is the underlying strength of the economy and people spending their hard-earned money on these goods and services that these technology companies have produced that have led valuations to be at this level.
All right. And does the optimism on tech extend to crypto exchanges as well? Coinbase earnings up 12 times more than the year ago. What's going on there?
Amazing, right? Like, volatility is obviously the friend of these exchanges, and they've done really well. So kudos to that.
Speaking of exchanges, you know, yesterday we spoke with a crypto exchange. They're centralized, they're transiting to decentralized. And they raised this whole issue of automated market makers. It's one of the strategies on their platform. It allows users to choose what they think will be most profitable of strategies, buy, sell, neutral. And it says that these automated market makers allow for passive liquidity providers to compete with professional traders. So I guess the question that we heard is, you know, what is an AMA? And can you make money with AMMs? So can you give us a primer on what automated market makers are?
Sure. So theoretically, this concept is very similar to, you know, real-world finance. What I mean by real-world finance is us as employees or people who are working, we earn money, right? We take that money, deposit it into a bank to earn a certain amount of interest. How does the bank generate money to pay us that interest? Because they take that asset and they go about lending it to SMEs, corporations, etc., in the further back end of the curve. By, you know, they loan out money to corporates for 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, etc., etc. That's how the bank affords, quote unquote, to pay us an interest on our assets. The exact same thing can take place in the crypto space, and it is, wherein if I somehow manage to accumulate an asset of a certain number of bitcoins or ether or any other crypto, I can take that asset, deposit it in one of these institutions, and that institution can try to earn money from that underlying asset in whichever way, shape, or form it so chooses to do so, thereby giving me a return on my asset. And that's a big question mark that people have about crypto, right? Like, oh, it earns nothing at all. There's this new segment within the crypto space that's come up, very similar to banks, I would say, that tries to provide you a return on that underlying asset. The problem, though, is with all of these, you know, get rich fast schemes out there, it's all about, you know, within like what is actually happening within that organization or that institution to be able to generate that return.
Yes.
We know banks, you know, government's providing a guarantee to your deposits, right? That's why we're very comfortable. I think it's up to like $50,000 or something. That's why we're very safe and secure in putting that kind of money within our local financial institution. The problem is, in this case, what exactly are these companies doing that enables them to make these kinds of returns? And a lot of, you know, things are out there where they say it's market neutral strategies. Bitcoin can go up to $150,000. It could go down to $2,000. It makes no difference. You will always be earning a certain fixed rate of return. And that's where the questions start coming in, where what exactly is happening? Is this institution licensed? Is the management trustworthy? Has management put in the money themselves into these kinds of structures to show that, you know, they're willing to eat their own cooking or not? And those are the questions investors should be asking.
So essentially, as using these platforms as an automated market maker, you're sort of you're becoming like a bank with your own NIM, net interest margin, so to speak. That's how the money is being made?
That is correct. So I take, so say, for example, I have 5 Bitcoin, right? And I take that and I give it to this institution. What this institution will do is either they'll have some kind of market neutral strategy where they'll try and arbitrage Bitcoin's price in, say, US dollar versus Korean won. Knowing that exchanges are trading in different prices, they're managing to pull that off. or they'll take that amount of Bitcoin and lend that Bitcoin out, or whatever the underlying crypto is, to another business who, for whatever reason, wants to have, who wants to like own a certain amount of Bitcoin. Rather than them mining it, they'll rather go to these institutions, pay them, say, a 1.5% interest rate, and buy these Bitcoins off of them, or, you know, loan the Bitcoins out to these people. Very similar to how a corporate wants cash, there will be other financial institutions out there who might want or need Bitcoin. Let's take an example of a much larger exchange, right? Or like Tesla, for that matter. They need to maintain a certain amount of Bitcoin within their balance sheet, especially if they start enabling customers to buy Tesla cars using Bitcoin. Like, you need to have that liquidity on their balance sheet.
Right.
How do they go about creating that liquidity? Either they can mine Bitcoin themselves, which is time-consuming, and, you know, that's not their business model, or they can come up to exchanges and stuff like this, and they can borrow these Bitcoin from these people. How do these exchanges lend out Bitcoin to these guys? By taking Bitcoin from retail investors like us, and they have to compensate us somehow. Hence, this concept of yield comes in.
As a retail investor, though, how do I figure out whether it is efficient, the rates that are being set for these things?
That's an excellent question. And I mean, what is the market standard rate? Like, I know if I go to a DBS, UOB, OCBC, I will get a flat 0.01% interest on my deposits.
Exactly.
When it comes to these exchanges, it's all about, or these, you know, groups of individuals or whatever you want to call it, these companies, it's all about trying to analyze how they're going about creating money using your asset to be able to compensate you for it. And that's something that a lot of due diligence is required because you're playing in a very unregulated space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the last public news that at least has been showcased of Vitalik, Ether founder, he himself came out literally like 1 year ago in August of 2020 saying that he's going to be staying away from this space. And that is because there's so much uncertainty, it's not regulated. You really don't know how these people are going about generating the required returns. So this is definitely not a space where, you know, trying to go for like the 10% per month returns that are guaranteed because they figured out some kind of, you know, insane market arbitrage strategy and stuff. If it looks too good to be true, then it probably is. And it's something to be very cautious of. That being said, though, you know, the investor type that's going into crypto are the ones that are trying to shoot for the moon, right? So
yes.
Then you might as well go all in and see how this works out.
That is good insight, especially as we're seeing a lot of people pouring money into the stablecoin industry, trying to make good returns, passive returns on stablecoins, not quite understanding the rates associated with it. How is value created? So thank you very much for that primer, Arun. Before we let you go, we got to talk about China. So China and what it's going to be taking aim at is becoming the new topic of conversation everywhere you turn, right? So right now it's business drinking. It was sort of the tuition agency earlier on. It was big tech monopolies earlier on. So now China's saying business drinking should be reduced. It should be replaced with correct values. This according to the Chinese Communist Party's anti-corruption watchdog. And this on the heels of a sexual assault case involving employees with Alibaba. Some under-table rules like forced drinking for business purposes, you know, scenarios where the drinking doesn't end. As long as there's food on the table, the eating is going on, the drinking must continue. That sounds like, you know, it could come to an end in China. And we saw effects on Kuaichou Muay Thai, the bellwether, alcohol stock falling by about 2% yesterday, Wu Lianghe, Yibin falling as well. So China's moved in recent weeks to clamp down on a whole host of sectors seen as contributing to societal problems. Arun, what are you witnessing? Do you see funds trimming China's stock weightage? We know Cathie Woods has dumped some China stocks.
Cathie Woods did. I think SoftBank, if I'm not mistaken, had its quarterly earnings yesterday or day before. And Masa San himself came out, right, saying there's just way too much uncertainty in China. And whether it'll take 6 months or 1 year, we'll wait and see how regulation eventually comes through. And then we'll make the call. which kind of goes against his 100-year vision of investing. But that's a separate topic altogether, I guess. But no, it's interesting where a lot of funds, taking a look at geopolitical risk, mm-hmm. have, and that's on the back of sudden volatile moves, they have no choice but to sell first and analyze later. And why do I say they have no choice? Is because it's the way the fund management industry is structured, where you have a daily mark-to-market, weekly mark-to-market, monthly mark-to-market, a certain volatility ratios that have to be capped. So there is no choice, especially for these fast-moving hedge funds. Whenever there's a big volatile move, you have to clean up your books and then reassess in due course of time. Sadly, we've seen the brunt of this, given the huge moves, we've seen even our homegrown longer-term investors like Temasek, GIC, taken huge hits on the back of these actions by the Chinese government. And, you know, that's sadly par for the course when you're dealing in, be it emerging markets or in a developed market like China, I would say, that is more centrally controlled. I think the question, though, is, and make no mistake about it, even in the U.S., or the EU, given the massive rise of these tech platforms, regulation is coming in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the exact story pan out. You know, I think it was close to a year or a year and a half ago, or maybe because of COVID, 2.5 years ago. The last 1.5 years is kind of muddy in my head.
True.
But regulation came out, and I think Facebook dropped like 8 or 10% in that day, right? So there's really not that big a difference between what we're seeing over there vis-a-vis what we're seeing in the likes of, say, Tencent and Alibaba, where the government has come out trying to foster entrepreneurship and creativity and trying to break down these tech barriers. Now, what's interesting is, that's my perspective, where I don't think China is going down this path of being anti-capitalistic at all.
Okay.
I would split the story into two parts. Mm-hmm. One is the one that you highlighted, which is, you know, anything, any industry that's there whose business model is not cohesive with CCP's idea of a stronger, more cohesive society, we're going to clamp down on that. You know, this education space sounds good on paper, but what that led to in terms of children having to, you know, go to school morning till afternoon and then going to tuition early evening to late night just to get into this rat race of getting into the best university. That aspect, this social drinking or like business drinking aspect, these are things that the government is really clamping down hard upon, and it's something that investors need to be very cautious about. The other side, the flip side, is when the government's getting involved in these tech regulations or trying to break them down, if done correctly, this can actually be a very opportune time to start scaling into these businesses, because one would hope that over the long term, this will actually foster a much better, much more progressive, a much more higher growth economy that will benefit everyone. The large tech companies, as well as the upcoming smaller tech shops in the future. And I think from the perspective of a retail investor who doesn't need to, and dare I say, shouldn't care about weekly or monthly mark-to-markets, this can be a very opportune time to start scaling into some of these names.
Wonderful insights as always, Arun. Thank you for the perspectives. He's Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. We'll speak with you next week, Arun. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me as always, Michelle.
This is Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO, available on Google Play or the App Store.